Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, we're so excited to welcome Katie Baker to the podcast. She's a CPA, CMA, a certified international trade professional, and the founder of Pricing for Profit.
Katie works with entrepreneurs in tech, services, and product-based businesses, either one-on-one or through team training, helping them to get really clear and confident about their pricing.
She's a consultant, a coach, and the creator of a practical system that's helped hundreds of businesses boost their profits with less stress and more clarity.
With over 25 years of experience across the private, public, and nonprofit sectors, Katie brings a ton of insight. And she also has a five-time entrepreneur herself, which is just incredible.
We can't wait to dive into this one. Welcome to the podcast, Katie.
Oh, thank you so much, Jennifer and Kim, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
All right. So I was going to insert into the intro that I'm one of the businesses you've helped. So Katie, we obviously are familiar with each other's work, and I'm so interested to dive a little bit deeper into your general business outside of what you've just specifically helped me with. But basically, you help protect small businesses by making sure they stay profitable. How often do you see people problems at the root of money problems in small businesses?
Oh, that is a great question. Because what can first rear its ugly head as operational issues very often comes down to people issues. So when employees aren't aligned within the roles they were hired for, you know, the outcome is like low productivity, poor utilization rates, and these can be hidden inside what is perceived as poor processes or operational inefficiencies. Or even some people project them onto, you know, oh, that's a bad client. That's why I'm not performing well. Payroll is almost certainly a company's biggest expense. And I'm going to say slash investment, because your employees are an investment in your business. And when that doesn't deliver in the form of corresponding revenues or profitability and profitability, money problems will predictably follow. Or, of course, I'd be remiss not to point out that underpricing will get you in trouble quickly. So I think the long story short is that people problems equal money problems.
So, Katie, I'm wondering how many of your clients are women versus men? Because we as women, especially women entrepreneurs, have an additional blockage when it comes to really understanding our worth and asking for what we think we are worth. Tell me a little bit about what you are seeing. Is that just Jennifer and I who talk about that, or is that really a pervasive issue and a trend that you see all the time?
Absolutely. It's very pervasive, and it is an issue 90%, and that actually might be low. It might be higher than 90% of my clients are women, and they come to me for a variety of reasons that are all around the same theme. They're busy, but they're not seeing profitability. They're ambushed by doubt around their numbers, and they know it's costing them. And sometimes they were profitable until tax time. And so these all come down to maybe avoidance, sometimes shame, just a little or a lot of insecurity around their numbers. And when we don't like something and feel insecure, we tend to maybe avoid it. And in the end, kind of bites the entrepreneur. And those are the type of clients that come to me and in turn are pretty grateful for our working together.
So are you saying that there are people who calculated their profit before they realized how much income tax they were going to pay and then were shocked by that when they got their return? I think I got a little bit nauseous when you said that, and it's not even happening to me right now. That's terrifying.
You used a word that they haven't even done, which is calculated. So there's no calculation. There is some eyes on the bank account, and there's money there, and then tax time rolls around, and all that money goes to tax, and they're shocked. And I've talked to many entrepreneurs, and not just women, men I've talked to who've fallen into this as well, where all of what they thought was profit went to tax.
I'm not surprised, to be honest, at all, because having been an employee for my entire career and then going out on your own and not having tax taken off every single paycheck, just in even an appreciation, because you're so focused on earning and you're so focused on, you know, you're charging your HST and your taxes and all kinds of things, that you forget sometimes that that HST isn't yours. And then tax season comes around and you have no real sense of where you're going to sit in the tax bracket. So I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually you get stung once and then hopefully you work to mitigate it in future years for sure.
So Katie, I have a question, and it is something that I have been provided quite a bit of feedback on, but I'm terrified of. The idea of you got to grow your business through hiring someone because you can't do it all yourself. You only have so many hours in a day. And if you really want to expand your business, then you need to have employees. But of course, terrified to hire an employee and to make a commitment to somebody's salary on a biweekly basis. And I've played with ChatGPT and she keeps telling me that I could afford it. And I'm like, yeah, maybe, but I still want shoes. So tell me a little bit about how are you advising your clients on when is the right time to hire and how do you know you can afford it and the shoes?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So it's all about planning. What are your growth goals? And how are you going to get there? And do you need staff to help you get there? And so it's all about planning. And when you hit the milestones, planning and tracking and planning back and forth. So looking, watching the numbers really closely. With my clients, we do a forecast for the year and check in on it monthly, quarterly, whatever makes sense. And, two things will be triggered as time goes on throughout the year. Either you're steamrolling down the track with business and you're getting exhausted and near burnout, and so you push the HR button, you need to hire someone. Or, it's the middle of the year and you're 25,000 below target, not terrible, but still you're below and you're like, gotta attend some more networking events, do some more marketing, so either one of those, when you're tracking the numbers, will be strong indicators of initiatives you should take in your business.
So, and sometimes that's, that decision is made in the moment and then something can change external to the business. And then you figure out, oh gosh, I shouldn't have hired when I did. So what are the warning signs that your payroll is getting ahead of your profit? And sometimes though, maybe you're going to take a little cash flow pinch with the view to an expansion or whatever that's coming down the future. How do you help balance all of that?
Yeah, and I have had clients who have done just that. A mitigating step before hiring, as you both may have experienced or know, is outsourcing via subcontracting. So you're really taking on someone to help you do a specific block of work. That's a mitigating factor. You will likely pay more for a subcontractor than you will an employee, right? But then your commitment to the employee and then those expected revenue streams to pay for that employee has to be much more assured. So it is a great conversation to have with your, I'm going to say accountant, but management accountant or someone who is coaching you in your business from a financial perspective. What does the timing of revenues and what is the longevity of some of your clients and your ARR and your MRR, your monthly recurring revenue? Like, how firm are those? How predicted and assured, I guess? If they are and they're strong, then an employee usually makes a better, more cost-effective decision, because again, the commitment and whatnot, your hourly rate is probably lower. But if it's less assured, then outsourcing and subcontracting, and that's a good way, with all due respect to the employee and treating them well, to test them. How is their utilization? How is their output? How am I seeing that reflected in revenues and then profitability?
I mean, it's so interesting because Jennifer and I spend a lot of time with scaling companies, and talking about processes that scale is one of the things that we are asked about most. Yet when I think about my own business, I cannot figure out what scales and what doesn't scale, because ultimately everything really relies on me and, you know, the expertise or the programs that I've built or whatever the case may be. And then, Katie, I'll make excuses for, well, it hasn't been enough time. Well, I don't really know what the trends are. So now it's 3 years in business and still feel like planning is not my friend, because I'm never sure when there's going to be the rush and when it's going to go just really quiet. And being a solopreneur is terrifying. So what do you recommend to your clients like Jennifer and I, who are a couple of years out? Jennifer has way more years than I do, never feeling like there's a trend that you can count on. How do you coach us?
Yeah, I mean, that is the legitimacy of that concern. I think I feel it too. And that uncertainty, I think it comes down to preference and your strategic goals. I'm a big believer, don't want to sound too hooey here, in the law of attraction. And so when you've made a goal, when you've made a strategic decision to scale to a certain capacity of either in dollars or clients or, you know, some combination of the two, and you vetted that strategy well with numbers, lots of thinking, digesting, rethinking, and then just pulling the pin and going for it. I do truly believe if you want to scale to a certain height of revenue and capacity, you will get there, but planning is going to be your friend. And the numbers are maybe like the number, the highway signs. You know, they're very directional. You'll get a lot of cues if you've planned this. This is my bias, of course, but it's a roadmap of numbers. And each milestone has certain targets around it. And you know, certain activities have to take place to meet those. So many clients, so many staff to service it. And, you know, I think it also, how well do you know the industry you're in? How well do you know your ideal client persona? How many are out there? Where are they? How willing are you to expand beyond your regional and national borders? So, you know, lots of things happening at once. It is a big and can be a complicated roadmap. For me, it starts with the numbers and creating a strategy around specific goals. And then attaining them is a matter of taking actions, checking in, tracking, recalibrating when need be. I don't want to make it sound easy. It's not easy, but lots and lots of entrepreneurs before us and in our midst and in the future will do just that.
So, Katie, on a episode that we recorded just before this one, we talked a lot about emotional triggers when it comes to finances and generally just emotional decision making. Help us out here, because I think everybody listening has probably experienced some of these, but what are the common sort of emotional decisions or emotional triggers that you see your client facing that prevent them from being successful in this area? And I'm going to put myself voluntary on the list. You've had to talk me down off a lot of ledges in our work together, and I think I'm still sitting on one right now. It's hard. It's actually the planning, the paper, and the numbers is the easy part. Being comfortable with all of this and not letting emotions take over the decision making is actually the hardest part, in my opinion. So what are some common pitfalls you see there, and what can people really do to get past those?
Yeah, and you know, there's a whole, I work with a lot of coaches and leadership coaches, and not to segue too far from the power of having a strong HR strategy as well as a pricing and forecasting strategy. But I think that's where, you know, maybe strong leadership coaches come in. I know I've taken leadership coaching, and it really, what is your core beliefs in yourself and your business? And, you know, what do you think your ability, you know, why do you think there's limits on your ability? And just kind of maybe putting some therapy around that. But, you know, like, and being ambushed by doubt, that is, I think, a very common entrepreneurial emotion. And I believe it's my bias, again, that when you have your numbers and you have them well planned, you've made strategic goals, you're working incrementally and responsibly and checking in to reach those goals. When you wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning and you're lying there like, why did I think I could do any of this? Then you have a checklist of reasons. Oh, right. Okay. I planned it. I've hired experts in the fields that I'm not. I have a powerful and winning value proposition. One of the entrepreneurial groups I'm in, we talked about the other day of having this folder of like all the thank you notes, all the powerful testimonies. And every now and then when you're ambushed by doubt, like honestly, you included, Jennifer, some of the testimonials I have read about my working with clients has brought tears to my eyes. The gratitude that they have had and the relief and the peace of mind from getting that uncertainty around all their financials sorted. And it literally is sorting, putting numbers in the right places and doing the equations based on that has allowed them to continue and grow their business. So it's a combination of things. It's not just one thing, but yeah. No rest for the weary when you're an entrepreneur, and especially when it comes to self-doubt. It's just an ongoing mountain, I think.
And so, Katie, how do you build in buffer? Because buffer allows us to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, buffer. I mean, I literally put in profit margin, and this is a buffer. I tell them, you know, on top of everything else we've gone through in terms of looking at all the costs, looking at all the operational potential and the capacity of the business, then we're going to put in a profit margin, which serves a number. I might be taking your question too literally, but literally putting in a profit margin buffer. So unexpectedly, a client drops off. Unexpectedly, a subcontractor drops off and you have to quickly and more expensively hire someone to fill in. So a buffer and a profit margin allows for ebbs and flows. COVID was a huge bleep, right? Now the tariffs are another huge unexpected speed bump. So buffers allow you to ride the waves that sometimes can become so overwhelming they just topple the business entirely. If you haven't put buffers in place, either financially or otherwise, you're going to feel the hits of the unexpected that much harder.
So one of the big things that HR consultants focus on is, you know, how do we decrease turnover and improve retention in the companies that we work with? This is a very common issue, a time when people might reach out to someone like Kim or myself for some help because they realize things are churning and they're losing valuable people that they couldn't afford to lose. And that can quickly really spiral out of control too, because it's kind of like the expression rats leaving a sinking ship. Like it can actually create a chain effect of people moving deciding that the organization is not the best place for them to be. And they get kind of into the spiral of panic. And we all know that turnover hurts morale in that way, but it's on us to try to help businesses quantify why the HR strategy that reduces that is valuable. So explain from an accountant's perspective how turnover really hurts the bottom line in a business.
Well, I mean, it is very costly. I guess I'm going to start with turnover hurts morale. Morale is affected by turnover. And all of that puts a significant drag on productivity. So now everybody's kind of distracted and the day-to-day gets, you know, pushed aside more than it should be. When motivation wanes and the will to achieve is kind of tenuous, then that is expensive because your staff utilization is going to be lowered. And so an optimum rate you want at staff utilization, you know, you pay staff your salary, and then they of course get so many vacation days and sick days and there's benefits and whatnot. So the actual dollar amount that each of your employees costs is actually much higher than their hourly rate. And so making sure their staff utilization, that they are set up optimally to succeed, is on an employer and an HR strategy in conjunction with operations and the financial will build an optimum strategy. But bad morale is like a germ, and it'll spread quickly. And really, I think is avoidable with good planning. So from an accounting perspective, you know, planning is a big part of numbers, and planning is a big part of operations and processing. And turnover, for whatever the reasons, needs to be, you go and speak to this more than me, whatever the reason needs to be figured out and solved and get back on track with. Otherwise, revenues will lag, profitability will lag. And what you think might be, you know, slow markets or difficult clients is really an internal issue.
Wow. But I'm going to guess, and you speaking as an accountant, there are no accountants who look at any of these spreadsheets and come in and be like, well, you know, this whole picture would look a lot better if you didn't lose someone every 3 months. Like, you don't look at that, you know, you're not saying, well, how's your turnover in these areas? Because you're, you know, maybe your recruitment budget is way out of line from what we planned, or, you know, I just feel like it doesn't come up very much on the accounting side. And it is one of the most costly things, costly mistakes that a business can make, is to just constantly churn through people and their knowledge and not fix it. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong at all. And here I'm going to put a little, 2025 was my year to evangelize a little bit about the accounting industry, which is you need two types of accountants. You need your financial accountant who is going to organize all of your numbers into, you know, generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP. And they're going to organize it for tax. It's going to be organized for sharing to shareholders or bankers or loaners. That's your financial accountant. What they do is very, very important. And then your management accountant, and that's what I do. Someone who's going to dig deep, pull at the threads of, wow, last year, or, you know, 2 years ago, you had the same number of employees and your payroll was X, and now it's like 20% higher. What's happening? Like, you know, notwithstanding perhaps, you know, better raises, what's happening? Oh no, we had a manager who people couldn't work with, and so we've had a lot of turnover. And so right there, now we've come right to the issue. We saw the numbers, we tracked it over time, and asked the question, and now we can say, okay, oh, you know, we've got someone in and we're strategizing around it, and seem to be back on track. You know, hopefully that's a long story short and what comes around with that conversation. But that is really generally financial accountants, that is not their wheelhouse. They will organize the numbers as they should be. They are organized for compliance. They're ready for tax, but they're not pulling at the threads of year over year, you know, what might be discrepancies or, you know, unwielding expenses. I think a financial accountant for the most part is like, you know your business best. Hopefully you have internal staff to address these questions. Not my role. I'm here to organize this for compliance.
I've also heard, though, that clients don't like to pay for advisory work like that. This must be your evangelizing part. Like, they don't understand the value in advisory. They just want the tax bill done.
I see the people who are desperate for the advisory. I guess that's why they take me up on my free discovery calls, is because they're desperate for it. I can tell you, when I see some interesting financials, and I depend on good financials to start the conversation. They're the footprints in the sand, so to speak. But I hear lots of shade thrown on accountants. And for me, it's, as a business owner, you're beholden to do some really key things within your business: deliver value, market to clients, track revenues and expenses. I mean, these are key tenets of being in business. And so I encourage business owners to take that responsibility. And so when I work with clients, I say the goal is pricing, and the journey will be greater financial literacy, which usually lands very favorably with them and is exactly what they were hoping, they gain in terms of knowledge.
So, Katie, for companies who are working cross-border, right now things are very interesting, and there seems to be a continual shift and change on a daily basis on tariffs and on whether or not you're legally allowed to be selling work or traveling to go to your clients, et cetera, et cetera. Certainly not asking you for legal implications, but what are you seeing from a financial perspective? And what would you advise an entrepreneur who is working on both sides of the border in North America?
So I put on my trade, my CITP hat. We enjoyed for years, like such a terrific relationship with the US in terms of, I mean, it was kind of, I used to say it was a relationship coveted really world over, that Canada and the US, the relationship as two countries, as neighbors, as strong neighbors, as, really twine families and friends and business owners. And at the end of the day, it's businesses that should be making the decisions. And I think the tariffs have thrown quite a wrench into what was a great, and hopefully will be continue as time goes on, a relationship between the two countries. And I guess I'd say the three countries, because CUMSA or USMCA includes Mexico as well. Sit tight. I think we've seen this administration do some pretty quick about faces. With all due respect, I think shaking up the tariff can and the topic, if we're going to look at a silver lining, long time Canadian provinces have not had favorable internal trade policies. And so that has really taking that conversation to the next final level of, let's now get the internal trade thing worked out. This is, like Atlantic Canadian, different provinces were trading in the US before they ever traded with each other because it was prohibitive from an interprovincial trade perspective. So that is a win. And also the Buy Canadian, I am seeing it with clients, which is just amazing that some big corporations are reaching out to small Canadian producers because they want to see more made in Canada on their shelves. So, sit tight, look for the silver lining. I mean, as of yet, services haven't been, if you're providing coaching or, services to US clients, at this point, those haven't been tariffed. So unless something changed recently, it's basically products that cross the border. So we still have the advantage of currency, which can act in our favor. And if you're still just trying to ride the wave, if you are a product producer, we still have the currency thing, as we were discussing earlier about even our own rates and different currencies. So I think there's a few strategies: deep breaths, more internal interprovincial trade, do networking. Canada's a huge country, and I think even now more than ever, they're wanting to source within Canada. So get in the right place at the right time and some rooms in Canada, you might be able to develop more business here.
Katie, you mentioned some statistics, utilization, and things like that that we should take into consideration when we're testing whether we need that employee or if the subcontractor relationship is working out. What does all of that look like on paper? Are there clues in the financials that you've made the right choice there that we can look for?
Yeah, so when I do pricing work with people and we do a deep dive into utilization, and then we understand their capacity to deliver. So, you know, you've got 5 employees and you've got X number of service hours and you have so many productized service and they all are time bound, basically. You know, you can see really quickly, a lot of people have just been their utilization, they have thought is the hourly rate of pay. You know, well, we pay them like, you know, our staff, our team of 5 is, you know, they're at 80,000 a year. And so it's $40 an hour. It's not $40 an hour. It's probably more like $55 to $60 an hour. That gap is huge. So when they're like, we're busy, but we feel like we're spinning our wheels. We're on a treadmill. We're not seeing profitability because you priced out your staff at $40 an hour and they're only delivering. They're not delivering 2,000 hours worth of, you've hired them for, you know, based on that, but they have vacation days, they have sick days, they're statutory holidays. And that brings that changes the ratio. So now your cost per hour for staff is higher. Another thing adding to the equation is it's easy. Okay, you get that figured out, staff utilization, okay, it's not $40 an hour, it's actually $58 an hour. Okay, check. But what, you know, how to accommodate and recover overhead. And so we do a deep dive into that and we get an hourly overhead recovery rate. Now we add those two together and a profit margin, and you do not want to price below this. And that is usually much higher than what they have had within their productized service. And there's lots of aha moments and lots of, well, how are we going to turn the dial and turn up the price? And that actually is the easiest part. The hardest part, you've come through. You've made a great and clear realization. You are simply not charging enough.
That's the easy part. I don't believe you.
Well, it's the part that you can calculate. It's the part that has numbers. It has, there's formulas, right? And I say, you know, like, honestly, there's lots of ways to articulate, you know, well, I have all my clients are on retainer. What am I going to do now? Like, I just on a retainer based on $100 an hour and it should be, you know, 195. Like, how do I turn that dial? Well, not overnight, but there's strategies of communication, and it's usually with trepidation that business owners go out to their clients and they're like, in 3 months, I'm going to be upping my retainers to this. And I have never, never yet heard of a client, I'm in service to every small business in the world, but, you know, that said, most said, I understand. Thank you. And, you know, well, I want to provide transparency, Katie. Is that okay? Yes, certainly. Like, let's talk about how you want to make this transparent. So it's usually the difficult thing is, how do I up the retainers? And obviously, if you're in a strong, strict contract, you have to wait till that. But, you know, don't wait till it's up and 3 or 6 months ahead of time. Give them a warning. You can add value. You can add, you know, things that aren't, you know, the perception of value. I'm not saying, like, you know, bamboozle them with words, but I think it's all about communicating and being honest with your client base. And I think they'll understand if they value you and your services, they don't want to see you go out of business because you can't afford to be in business. They understand that. You can walk into a restaurant and their prices could go up every day, depending on food costs. I think we think that prices, you know, we set them in stone and that's it. They can't be moved. But in many industries, prices are very dynamic, as we know, and they move all the time. And so I think we should adopt that fluidity based on our own costs and our financial personal goals to stay successful and to stay in business.
Well, I am certain that there are people listening today who can relate to all of the things that we've talked about. So thank you so much, Katie. It's just a lot to absorb because we're sitting here not just as podcast producers. We are in this battle, you know, with our self-doubt and we're trying to grow and then we're like, do we want to? And we tried some people and oh, we don't like people. You know, we've gone through the whole gamut. Both of us, Kim's looking shocked. Of course, we love people. We just
Love
haven't loved
people.
everyone that
We're
we've hired.
people.
Well, no, honestly, I mean, no, there are people, and there are people who are afraid of hiring. The fear is real. And the notion of being professional and strategizing in a way that makes sense and hiring an HR professional is how you mitigate that. You must see it every day. The power of being proactive with HR, with businesses and those who are not, and how they suffer financially, emotionally. I mean, the suffering must go deep when you have not proactively set an HR strategy in place.
Yeah, definitely scary. And it's you can lose your business, you know, just on people stuff
Absolutely.
alone.
It's your
I've seen it
biggest, it's
happen. Yeah.
likely your biggest cost.
It's a
40 to 70%. That's what textbooks say, Katie. 40 to 70% of your operating costs.
It's huge. It's so much. And so also that is a really good point, like ratios, knowing the ratio of your business. What should my payroll, what is, and I mean, this is where AI comes in. I mean, fact check with other resources, but do some quick research. What is in my industry? What is the ratio of payroll to revenues on an annual basis? And see where yours lands, and then make decisions accordingly.
All right, Katie. So, what's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
I think it's all about how you treat your people. Treat them good. Treat them good. If they are doing good work, treat them good. Sometimes, every day, thank you guys. Great job. Like, free coffee and lots of compliments and support. I think it's honestly priceless. A lot of that is free. It's
I
free.
know.
It's
Free.
genuine, kind words to other humans about what they're doing goes a long way.
Thank yous are cheap and very valuable. Yeah. Okay. Kim, let it rip.
All right. So, Katie, tell us, what was your first job?
Waitress.
Oh, love that. Tell us
Server,
more.
lobster suppers in Prince Edward Island.
Oh, classic. You are not our first lobster supper server that we've had on here.
All right, best job.
You know what? Honestly, best job is the job I have now. Love what I do. Love working with my clients. Have always been intrigued with how businesses can make more money, how people can be profitable. This is my favorite job.
Biggest mess up at work.
So before I took my business degree at UPI, I went to business college in Halifax, and this is perfect because this is just a misfire hire, a misfire hire. So quick, here's the quick hire mistake to a maternity leave. Honestly, this lawyer could not, he did not want to let his legal assistant go, but she was about to have a baby any day. She's like, I have to leave. So they hired me very quickly, and I was let go within a few months because I was so literal. And I think I called like the opposing whatever to ask them a question. In hindsight,
Oh.
it's so obvious the mistake I made, but at the time I just wasn't trained. I was a quick hire and I wasn't properly trained. So
That's
yeah, that was a
hilarious.
misfire. It was funny in hindsight.
I love that one. Best learning.
Best learning, you know what? I'm gonna admit it, like at the corner of chaos and like what feels like the worst moment in your life, whoa. You are going to learn lessons you will never forget. Have happened a few times. I have been in business a few times. Some of them were, I look at them again and again and I tell the stories and I'm like, it was unavoidable. This woman came into our fabric shop every day for 6 months. We thought she was our best customer. 6 months later, she opened the exact same store across town. It was not a big town. She had contacted all the same suppliers and she opened it. So, you know, how do you avoid that? We thought she was our best customer. But other lessons you learn that, you know, you just never forget. You just don't forget them and you don't do them again. And yeah, that's the way life goes.
Your quickest quit.
You know what? I don't have one, but I wish I did. There are a few jobs I should have quickly quit. Yeah, no, I'm, you know, old school. I don't have one, but I wish there's a few jobs I can name right now that I wish I had quickly quit.
The first one to tell us that. I wish I had quit.
Score one for the quitters, because yeah. We've had no quitters on this podcast. Everybody's like, oh no, I stick it out. And I'm like, what's wrong with you people? Quit.
It's true. It's honestly true. Yeah. Sadly, you know, I can think of a few I should have sashayed into someone's office and said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I love that. All right.
So much, Katie. It was very informative, lots of fun. And what I love most is that it's real world stuff, right? This isn't the textbook. This is the real world stuff. Acknowledging that none of us are perfect, obviously, and have a long way to go. But having folks like you in our corner is definitely a massive advantage.
Amazing. It has been so much fun and I can't wait to ever come back, if I can, to come back again. This was amazing. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
Thanks for listening.